Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel. Well, wishing you a happy new year and welcoming you back to another weekly look for the world of non-league football. A new year and new stats and facts for an FA Cup competition. Yes, it's Phil Innes. He starts us up as we embrace round four of the FA Trophy. The last 32 with plenty of shocks and curveballs sure to come. Next, a first for me on the show. A manager with a 100% record in his managerial career, in the league at least, and he's not even a newbie. Corner top of the Northern Premier League Midlands Division and under new management since the summer, Ryan Bezic is a man known to many in non-league from his playing days. Now featuring as a player manager, I have to say I'm not even in the dressing room and I'm inspired. Hopefully as good a listen as it was to chat with him. Matt Badcock helps round up the news of the week from the non-league paper. A few different angles this week giving insight into the changing game of the non-league world. So there's plenty of stuff to come. Time to sit back, relax, and let's get matters underway. So there is only one way we could start off the new year. If you've already devoured your Christmas present at the Guinness Book of Records, if you've already reorganised your football programme collection and once again took the hind legs off every Christmas donkey ever known to man with your non-league insight at family gatherings, then like me, you'll be in need of a stat top-up. He wasn't mentioned in the King by the King in the New Year's honours, so instead we honour him at the start of the new year and welcome him back to the non-league football show. It's Mr. Phil Innes with his at FA Trophy Facts hat on. Welcome back, Phil.
Oh, wow. Yeah, great. Great to be back. Happy New Year to you, too.
It's a Happy New Year because it's a busy old week in New Year. We're used to sort of FA Cup taking front and centre. We've got FA Trophy this weekend. The cold spell about to hit. Hopefully not going to hit the football calendar, but it's useful. You've got all these hats, really. You've got your FA Trophy hat on this week, and I guess part of that, the FA Cup too, because of the way that falls next week, although we'll pick up with you on that next week, along with the double for the FA Vars too. Just a slow lead into the new year for you then.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, no chance of a dry January for me. I have to get stuck straight in and take whatever sustenance I need to keep me going throughout it all.
If you're anything like me, though, Phil, there's enough sustenance we've all taken in over Christmas that we could probably survive until, I think, the second week of February at least.
Indeed.
But we do need your stats. So we've got the FA Trophy round four, as I say, last 32. So we've got 16 ties. And of those 32 clubs, we've got seven that can set a new record in the competition for their club.
That's right, yes. So seven of the sides still standing. With a victory would create a new club record. Some have already achieved that just by being in this round. And we have a couple of ties where it's guaranteed that the winner will set their best run. And we probably couldn't get a more disparate tie than Rochdale versus Stockton Town. The clubs who've got very different histories. And Stockton Town had a fantastic victory in the last round over Oldham Athletic with a similar sort of disparity. So they will be going into this tie, buoyant thanks to that wonderful win over Oldham to take on Rochdale, who have only been in the competition once before, as we know, because they only came down a couple of seasons ago. But if you look back at 15 years ago, I think Stockton Town were still competing in the Teesside League. So, you know, that's a big gap between them and Rochdale back in the day. And it's now they're playing on a level playing field and winner takes all.
The magic of the FA Trophy, and you say two of those ties guaranteed. Yes. And the other one, a Barker tie.
A Barker tie, yes. It's a Sittingbourne take on Salisbury in a great Barker tie there. And it's a wonderful occasion for Sittingbourne, who have already created FA Trophy history just by being in this round for the very first time in what is their 50th FA Trophy campaign. So that's the most number of campaigns any clubs needed to make their first appearance in the last 32. So they're the top scorers this season already. They've scored 15 goals in, and they've had six victories already. So they've been going since sometime in September. They take on Salisbury, who themselves are equaling their best ever run just by being in this round, and will be looking to try and get into the last 16 for the very first time themselves.
And that tie, just the magic of the FA Trophy, but also the magic of Phil Annetts and his stats. I'm not sure I would have found that information anywhere else. The thing that everywhere else grabs hold of, though, are cup sets, aren't there? And there's potential for a few of those this round. I think a number of Step 3 sides looking to create cup sets against higher-ranked opposition.
Yeah, there's quite a few Step 3 clubs who are taking on clubs from the top level of the non-league pyramid or from the second level. And also, you know, with the opportunity themselves to set new club best runs. Churchy Town won't have to travel too far to face Aldershot Town with a two-step gap to have to overcome. But they're in this round for the first time ever already. I think we've also got Biggleswade Town, who have made it this far before, but a victory for them would take them to the last 16 for the first time, and they host Oxford City, one level above them. And I think the third one there we've got is Basford or Basford United. I never know how you pronounce it. Into this round for the very first time, you host Eastleigh from the National League. And so they themselves will be all looking to try and continue their record runs in the competition and cause a bit of a surprise at the weekend.
Yeah, surprise is something that we love on this show. And was I surprised? I wasn't surprised, but I was pleasantly surprised, maybe, when I spotted your description of the Southend United against Southport tie.
Yes, having come from Southport myself for part of my youth, I was well aware that we had, I think it was the second longest pier in the country, and that was apparently only usurped by Southend. So the two sides are drawn together as the last tie out the hats in what I'm called the Pier Derby, or you can call it the opposite ends of the country South Derby, whatever name you want to give it. But for Southend, they've not had many campaigns, obviously, in the trophy. A good win for them would equal their best run, but Southport, we're no former finalists, and they'll be hoping to cause an upset down there in the Essex coast.
Yeah, looking forward to the non-league paper report on that one. You know, my peer's bigger than your peer. I don't will it have to be peer reviewed? I don't know. We've got I think that's, as you say, one of the three sides equaling their best ever endeavours in the FA Trophy. A couple of other big names, big clubs that are hoping to achieve the same this weekend.
Yeah, so there's a few clubs there that if they win, they would equal their best run to the last 16. Hampton and Richmond did it last year, and they take on Spennymoor to try and do it again. Southend, we've mentioned, one of them. And the other one is Radcliffe, who travelled to three times trophy winners Woking, having last made the last 16 29 years ago. So that would be some feat if they can match what they did back then and maybe go on even further.
And as you say, yeah, Woking three-time winners, it just shows the highlights, the strength of this last 32, and also the fact that there's another four-time winners among that 32 as well. So five previous winners of the FA Trophy in this last 32.
Yes, there are. Yes, so we've got clubs like Altrincham who faced Barnet in a tie that could have been the final a couple of years ago. They were both beaten semi-finalists. We've also got York City travelling to Gainsborough Trinity in another tie there where Step 3 club is looking to try and overcome higher level opposition that we hadn't mentioned earlier. We've got the holders, obviously Gateshead, who made it through to this round, having scored eight goals in the last game that they played against a weakened Farsley side, I think. But that is still the third highest tally any club has ever scored in an FA Trophy game. So quite an achievement there. And then there's also Kidderminster Harriers, who host Slough Town, and they've got quite an interesting recent record in the trophy. In the last 5 years, subsequently gone from a three-round knockout 5 years ago, then a second round 4 years ago, then a third round 3 years ago, the fourth round 2 years ago, and the fifth round last year. So that trend suggests that they'll be heading to the quarterfinals this season.
Well, that's a very interesting stat. I love that one. I'm sure Phil Brown would have been doing his research, and I'm thinking of him into Harry's maybe defending deep. If anybody's seen Scotty Davis's goal from Boxing Day, stay switched on, I think he'll be shouting from the touchlines.
Yeah, he certainly will, but I'm sure Slough Town will be keen to break them down, and they haven't been in the last 16 for 20 years, so they've got their own motivation to do well this weekend.
Indeed. And we love the fact that that these ties are sometimes throw themselves up and sort of we have a repeat a chance for revenge and that not too many this time around though in this round, I guess probably because of the numbers that we're down to.
Well, there is that as well. That is a factor that you've got so few ties in total, but still a couple is quite low. So we've only got two ties where there's past trophy history. Gateshead, we mentioned, they've got Boston United, and they've met twice before actually in the competition with one win each. So we'll get dragging right. And this time around, the only other tie that's happened before in a competition is Forest Green Rovers and Chorley. They met, I think, about 11 years ago in the second round, and had fought out two 0-0 draws. So hopefully there'll be goals this time around. But Chorley won through on penalties, and I know that from reading Twitter and X accounts that the Chorley fans are looking forward to repeating that feat from that time they went back there 11 years ago.
I just wonder whether a lot of people are going to turn up in the second half, though, knowing that previously there were 2-0 draws. Yeah, we'll turn up later. We'll turn up for the finale, as it were. Exciting ties all around. Any exciting stats that we maybe have missed out on already there, Phil?
I think we've covered them all off. I think we've hit the major stats of the round there, so we've done well.
Oh, well, you've hit the major stats of the round, Phil. We have to say that. And, as I say, you've got a busy week ahead of you with this FA Cup and FA Vars. I guess we should leave you to go and prepare for that. But before I let you go, where can people follow you on social and get all the stats that they need?
Yeah, so you can follow me on X, Twitter, at FA Trophy Facts is the one for the FA Trophy. I've got facts and stats for all of these 16 ties that are happening this weekend. So have a troll through my recent Twitter feed and you can see those. And then for the other competitions, at FA Vars Fact File for that competition and at FA Cup Fact File for that competition. And there'll be lots of stats and facts coming on those two accounts in the next 7 days or so.
Lots to keep us all busy. I'll be keeping my eyes on that. And Phil Annetts, it's always a pleasure to get you on the Non-League Football Show. It's great to have you back for the new year. I'm sure we'll be talking to you again next week. But until then, have a great week. Thank you.
Cheers, Tim. Thanks very much.
OK, so now, as many of you will know from my discussion with Phil Annetts earlier, one of my loves of the non-league game comes from the fact that history is made nearly every day at our level of the game. Every day is a learning day. You meet new fantastic people, many of whom are setting new bar heights themselves. And in the 30 plus years reporting on league, on the non-league game, I don't think I've ever had the opportunity to speak to a manager who's never lost in the league in charge. To tell us more, it is a pleasure to welcome to the Non-League Football Show manager at Corn FC, Ryan Beswick. Welcome, Ryan.
Hiya, thank you for having me.
Well, it's good to get you on. I mean, it's historic. You stepped up in the summer to become player manager. 24 league games, atop of the NPL Midlands division at step four. You've got 20 wins, 4 draws, 0 defeats, 67 goals, I think 10 of which you've scored, against 17 goals just conceded. That puts you on 64 points, top of the table, 19 points clear of second, and you've got a whopping 50-plus goal difference. Now, you're going to tell me that's just how you planned it anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd love to say it's all what I thought would happen at the start of the season in July when I got the job. But I'd be a big liar if I did say that. It's obviously, when you hear it back, I've not actually heard it like that in terms of
You've never lost in the league as a manager.
I know, yeah, it's weird. It is a weird one. Like, obviously, because we've been going so well recently, it's been a few newspapers and people, and they say, what's the seat? And I actually don't know what's gone on. It's crackers. I've never, as a player, gone on more than like an 8 or 9 game winning streak, and then this happened, and it's like, whoa, what are you doing? So right, and I'd love to say I've got a secret like Pep that nobody's going to unlock my book, but I'm not too sure what it is.
Have you not had the book contract over Christmas? Is it someone's approached you for it?
yeah. Well, I've had a few managers. Now Pep's struggling a bit at Man City. I keep bantering the lads, saying, you know what, lads, he's going to ring me on Monday. I know he's going to ring me soon.
Oh, that'll be that toughest decision of your life, won't it? Do I go now or do I? Yeah. I'm truly hoping I'm not the jinx now, because I've been keeping an eye, obviously, and seeing you. You're still you're the highest placed club not to lose in the league as well this season. But I'm looking at 2025 for you already. The opening few weeks of this year, they're going to be a real test, though, aren't they? This weekend, Long Eaton United, your visitors, they're currently in fourth place.
Yeah, we've sort of, you look ahead a bit, don't you, when you have like little 2 or 3 month blocks and each month goes by, and then you look at January and mid-December, you're like, oh, there's some good tests there. Even over Christmas, we had, obviously, it's a local derby over Christmas, and I think it was the first time for most of the season we weren't top of the 6-game form table. The team Shepshed we were playing were top of the 6-game form table, and that was tough. And then we went to Anstey, who then they were on a 6-game winning streak or something on the 30th of December, and they were then the new top of the 6-game form table. So it was back-to-back tough ones. And then we've got Long Eaton, who they play unbelievable football, Long Eaton. I know their manager quite well, and we had a really good ding dong at their place early in the season, managed to nick a draw from them. But yeah, that'll be a really tough one. And then we got Sporting Kousa, who are up there as well the week after. So it doesn't get any easier. But along the way all season, we've had runs where it's been like, oh, these next three, this will be a good test. This will be a good test. And you see it obviously all over Twitter and stuff. We drew a game when we were three up. When that windy day the other week against Worcester, we were three up, and then we drew 3-3. And then after then, it was like, oh, this will be a test for them now, see what they've got. And the lads have been unbelievable. They just didn't really bat an eyelid to it. They just got on with it and went again.
And I'm looking ahead as well. You've got second place Corby as well coming up in the start of February. This management stuff, though, Nucci, you had a great career as a player, notably Solihull Moors, Nuneaton. Were you ever destined to go into management?
Yes. Yeah, I do believe so. Solihull Moors was, obviously where I spent most of my time, and I had a manager called Marcus Bignot, and he was really ahead of the non-league stigma of running really hard and working really hard, and he sort of got into us and tapped into our football brains and taught us that you can pass the ball, you can actually do patterns of play in non-league, and you can have a style of playing that's not just really long ball, because until then you only come up against like Drawsden and Hyde and stuff like that in the Conference North that played proper football. And he really tapped into my brain and got me thinking a lot more about what I can do, and as an individual in my performance, and how I can help others with my talking and stuff. And that was from probably when I was 24-ish that I started thinking, I'm definitely going to carry on in coaching or managing after I've stopped playing. But I didn't think I always said I wouldn't do the two together, though.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to ask. I mean, how hard is that? Do you then have to rely on the guys that are on the bench to sort of get your instructions out? Or can you shout more when you're on the field? How does it work?
Yeah. Well, it's good. I've got a really good assistant manager, Sean Wilkes, who's only 33 himself, but he's been involved in football, lower level, like step six. And like, he's always been a manager and done really well. And he knows football. In terms of how to speak to people and stuff like that. And I've always been a captain on the pitch as a player, so I've always been quite mouthy and loud and opinionated to my teammates on the pitch. So it's gone okay in terms of managing people, I thought, because I can get a bit frustrated on the pitch. I thought that might spill over and then the lads would lose respect for me, but I've it's gone okay so far, and it does help. I said to someone last week, I think it helps that you're a manager on the, as a player, because you can change things on the pitch. Like, sometimes they don't hear you from the side.
Well, I suppose it's like being a manager of an office or something, isn't it? If you put your hand down the toilet and get yourself dirty, people respect you a bit more.
Yeah, yeah. I did say that in my first meeting in pre-season as well. Like, every, you know, when you... I took the job, and then from then it was like, oh, God, I've got to get my brain in gear here about how to be a manager. So you look at stuff and what Fergie says and all these people that are the great sayings that are out there, like Alf Ramsey and all that. And I said to the lads in my first chat with him, I said, I'll never ask you to do something I wouldn't do myself, on the pitch or off the pitch. In terms of what we do at this football club, if I ask you to do it, it's because you know I'd do it myself. And that has come to fruition, has been things like extra running and stuff. I'll be out there doing it as well. So there's been no grey areas in terms of my standards and stuff. And the lads have all bought into it, which has been the best part.
But how are you coping with the... Yeah, it's effectively two jobs, isn't it? Because you've still got to do all your player bit and the management. I guess, you know, probably Christmas presents, you've got every autobiography under the sun now as well, have you?
Yeah. I've had a couple of books this Christmas. But it is hard. It is really hard. I can't shy away from the fact that it is very, very consuming. Got an 11-month-old baby as well. So my wife wasn't over the moon when I decided to take the job. I don't think... She even though she wasn't happy then, she didn't think that I'd be laying in bed thinking of the next game, which is 2 weeks away, of what I'm going to do with team and shape and training sessions and stuff like that. And I didn't expect that, to be fair. I've never been a take football home with me player. But even we played on the 30th against Anstey, and our next game was this Saturday. And that night I was laying up till like 2 a.m. thinking of how we're going to combat a really, really good and strong Long Eaton team. And that does get you the next day, you're trying to work and you're trying to do your normal day to day and get yourself prepared for another game physically to play in. So it is hard, but it's been really enjoyable. But I do think the results have helped it being enjoyable.
no doubt. And you say you played Monday against Anstey Nomads, who were the team that beat you in the playoff semi-finals. I would imagine plenty of emotion in that one. But then, did it mean you had New Year's Day off? Because you were the team that weren't playing it. Or were you straight back on it and going watching elsewhere?
No, I went to... Well, to be funny enough, I was going to, and it sounds a bit rubbish for me, but I went to... Two of my old teams, Solihull, were playing Tamworth New Year's Eve. So I went to that. It's the first time I've been back there in a while. So I went there. That was a good day. But then, obviously, the wife was like, well, you can't go out New Year's Day and scout another game. So luckily, like Wilco, my assistant, he went to watch a game, which was good, and he fed back the results from what he saw, because I was on daddy daycare that day and keeping the wife happy. Unfortunately,
it's all about the balance, is it? You know,
it's the balance. That's the hardest bit. The balance,
And talking about the team around you, you're used to playing at a higher level and having different resources available to you. Anstey, very much an up-and-coming club. You haven't got the resources that are available. Has that been frustrating? Is that hard? Or does it spur you on even more against, maybe other clubs that have got better resources?
I've said this from the start. The start of the season, there was no real expectations. And you look at the clubs we're up against, even Anstey are our closest rivals, but they're a bit in a better position club-wise than us, I think, on the journey. And then we've got like Corby and Worcester, and you see they're getting 700-800 fans in through their gate, and we're like miles down on that one. So they are bigger clubs than us, but resources-wise, we've not got a great deal, but it's a good club and it's getting better. There's been obviously frustration. I'm trying to help with stuff off the pitch. But if I start putting my finger in all the pies, I literally wouldn't sleep and I wouldn't be at home. So it's hard. We're trying to help it. Like, obviously, the club are helping me, as it's my first job. And there's some really good people here. And I'm trying to help the club with what I've seen and clubs I've been at before and how they've done certain things and how they've generated more money from the bar area and bits and bobs to add to the income that all ends up in my budget, essentially. Yeah. So it's in my best interest to try and help in that side of it.
Well, I've seen already what you have new tables and chairs arrive at the clubhouse. So you say you're down on numbers, but the numbers are up on attendances considering where they were. You know, last year was the highest place finish ever for the club. As you say, great people in it. I think merger with junior side FC Seagrave over the summer means an expanding club. And it must be great as a new manager, someone that's been in the game so long, to be given an opportunity by a club like that, because there's different expectations, different pressures, aren't they? And they want to learn from you as much as you want to learn from them.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's that. So in the summer in May, when I got offered it, I spoke to Marcus Bignut. He's still a good friend of mine.
Old friend of the show. We need to get Marcus back on.
Is he? Great guy. My favourite ever manager. And I spoke to him. A couple of other managers that I've stayed, Dino Marmi, who's had a good career in managing, and I'd said, what are your thoughts? Because I was really torn. I wanted to carry on playing for as long as possible, because obviously ex-players that I'm still speak to, like, play as long as you can, play. You're a long time retired. So I didn't want to stop playing, and spoke to Biggs and spoke to Dino and spoke to a couple of others and said, what do you think? And explained the club and situation. They were like, I'll be honest, you're probably not going to get a better opportunity. There'll be better managers than me that have to start lower than me or at clubs that aren't in as good a position as us. Like, we've got a lovely Astro, like you said, the new kids teams and stuff coming in. There's a buzz around the place at the minute. And they said, you've got to do it. You'll always end up in managing. And if you put it off now, you don't know where you might have to start right at the bottom. So it's, it was a good start and a good place to start. And it fits in really well with me. Like, I'm really local to the club as well, so I know the community and all that side of it. So it did fit well, and it was no brainer when I convinced my missus, then it became a no brainer.
But then I'm looking back, opening day game of the season, a 5-1 win against Sutton Coldfield.
Yeah.
But didn't you go 1-0 down in that? Are you then thinking, what have I done?
Ish, yeah. Well, it was really funny because we just got off to a flyer in pre-season. Pre-season was, you couldn't have written it to go any better, really. We had some really tough tests against higher opposition like Brackley, Alverchurch, Spalding, and we won all them. I know it's only pre-season, but we won them, and it just gave I think from the lad's point of view, it was like, oh, he's all right. He knows what he's talking about. Like, we changed shape a few times, and during games, I was, without admitting it at the time, I was trying to win every game. Even, like, as a new manager, you want to get your start off to a good start, and I really wanted to win, and they were friends of mine, the other team's managers, and they probably didn't want to win as much as I did because of where I am in my journey. And I think it just really helped the lads. And then first game of the season, we were, to be fair, it was a mad goal why we went one down, to be fair. Our centre midfielders passed it back to the keeper, and we've got an Astro, but it's the bobbliest Astro in the world. And our keeper's gone to kick it, and it's bobbled over his knee, and then their striker's just chased it down and tapped it in. But we were playing well, and I knew we'd score, but yeah, to get to a 5-1 start was, we couldn't have written it really any much better than that.
And I find it remarkable. I'm talking to a manager that's never lost in the league, but also a manager that's never won in an FA Cup competition or FA Trophy. Yeah, all that great league form, FA Cup competitions have been awful for you. FA Trophy, first qualifying round defeat, 4-1 at Hensford, maybe expected, but 4-0 away in the FA Cup preliminary round at Cleethorpes.
Yeah.
I mean, really, that might have derailed many other sides for the whole of the season.
I said the Cleethorpes game is the best thing to happen to us. Because we were doing well in our league, and then that happened. We did make quite a few changes, and it could have been 9, to be fair to them. They were unbelievable on the day, and I'm glad that they're top of their league. It's the same step as us, but they're in a separate side. They're top of their league, which is nice to know that we didn't get battered by someone who's struggling. But yeah, it was the best thing to happen to us. And then obviously Hensford are Hensford this year. They've got some real firepower there, and again, it was another tough test for us, and we did make some changes. I'll be honest, as a player, this is probably from Biggs as well. We're never going to win the FA Cup. We're probably never going to win the FA Trophy, but we've got a chance in the league. So you do, without really admitting it, you put all your eggs in one basket, because at the end of the day, it's you're only going to win one of them. I don't think we're going to win all three.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you've got enough eggs already in the basket to make a very big celebration cake. It sounds like you're enjoying it, which, as you said, that helps with the results. But any regrets at all? I guess a bit more family time, but
Yeah. No regrets. Funnily enough, no regrets. No. It's hard to, isn't it? I can't really.
You're still in football. Really, you've got the best of both worlds, really, haven't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, that is true. That is very true, because I've always been always close to my managers that I've had, and always been quite opinionated. If I feel they've got something wrong in selection or shape and stuff, I've always found it hard to not voice my opinion to them. So now it's on me and it's all my decision. I really, really enjoy that stuff. But you do feel the pressure of it, because it is on you. It's your call at the end of the day, who's playing, what shape we're playing, what sort of tactics we're going to play, and being on the pitch. Luckily, I'm delivering okay in terms of my performance, but if I wasn't, I think there might be the lads' few eyebrows raised at me trying to tell them what to do when I can't even do my own job the pitch.
You've got to take yourself to one side and have a quiet word. Yeah,
I did have a really bad game the other week, and I said to the lads, look, I'm really sorry, boys. I was horrendous, but we managed to win, so I got away with it. They got me out of the trouble out there.
Before I let you go, though, because you're going to have the lads in for training, no doubt, this evening, but... Yeah. Where do you go from it? We're just over halfway through the season. As I say, you're 19 points clear. You've got to take every game as it comes. But have you set yourself any records, you know, like points wise?
Nah.
Goals wise for yourself as well as a player? Do you set yourself targets as a player now to keep those legs going?
I've never done it as a player, to be honest. Always liked the 15 number to score, but that's shooting for the stars, isn't it? But no numbers, no nothing. The clean sheets one is something that we've prided up, really hit home in pre-season. We wanted to be good defensively, and I think we've got 13 or something like that clean sheets this season. It's something incredible. That one's really good. And then obviously when you're scoring, we've got some good firepower, and the lads are producing at the other end as well. So it does look good on paper. The amount of goals we scored and the plus 50 goal difference after 20 odd games is amazing to see. But in terms of targets, no, nothing. Just now we could admit that we're trying to win the title. So it's just getting the job done.
Yeah.
About 4 weeks ago, we're just seeing how it goes. There's bigger and better clubs than us. They'll end up catching us. But now we're in the position we're in, I think it would be a bit silly of us to still try and pretend we weren't looking at the end goal.
Yeah, I think you're probably safe from relegation for sure. So, as I said, I've been doing non-league for 30 years, doing this show for 20 years. In 20 years' time, when I ring you up, where are you going to be?
I don't know. I'd love to say on a beach in Barcelona. On my day off, because the lads have just won in the Champions League semi-final the night before or something. But you never know in football, do you? You see some crazy stories about how people have gone and where they've come from and stuff like that. Even like the Cowley brothers, I've followed their story a bit because we played them at Lincoln, and they're really nice people. And then you find out they were teachers and managers at step 4 and 5 and whatever, and the careers they've gone on to have, and loads of people like that. But I've still got more of a player's head on than a manager's head. And it's funny. I still just think, oh, I'd love to have another big game. Like, the crowds aren't great at this level, and it would be really nice to have like a Stockport away again, you know, like rolling back the years where you can play.
You might need to manage a win in an FA Cup competition.
Yeah, maybe I'll have to change the eggs where I put them for next season then, and see if we can get a little FA Cup run for a big game like that. But no, in terms of long distance goals, I've not got any. Just stay healthy. Hope all my friends and family are healthy, and that's about it, really. Live day to day.
That's brilliant. And that's why we love people in non-league, and loved having you on, Ryan, and wish you the best of luck. And hopefully, who knows? It might not be 20 years, but we'll certainly speak again soon.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. Appreciate it.
Well, for the first time in 2025 then, let's head on over to Non-League Paper Towers, and it is time to welcome back once again to the Non-League Football Show, editor at large at the Non-League Paper, Mr. Matt Babcock. Welcome back, Matt, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Tim. Happy New Year. New Year. Here we are.
New Year. I've always wondered. You say Happy New Year, and you never. It might be. It's normally the first time you met that person of the New Year. You don't know what their New Year's been like. It might not have been happy.
Well, mine was unfortunately ruined by wet weather, so I didn't get to go out to a game yesterday. But that's the way of, you know, that's the life of non-league, isn't it? It gives us a midweeker down the line. That's the way I'm looking at the moment.
Well, I mean, interesting that one, isn't it? That we've got maybe a cold spurt coming in, so that might affect the calendar there. But it the weather, what do they say? Weather and politics are sort of the big talking debates. There's long with non-league football, of course, at any family gathering. This last week, we've had games, not necessarily off due to the pitch. We've had fog and we've had other reasons for games being called off that aren't really the fault of the referee, but it does seem that some of the officials and club officials have been getting the blame as well for the weather.
Well, I've been thinking that, you know, some of these officials need to sort of start doing something about the fog. you know, it reminded me of a friend of the paper many years ago, Barry Lenton, mm-hmm. told me this story. Marine super fan, Barry Lenton told me this story about a game down in the, I want to say it was in the Western League, where the game was abandoned for fog, and unfortunately, no one told the assistant, who was just stood out there for a good sort of 5-10 minutes afterwards, while everyone else had got in, just sort of stood there in the fog, kind of wondering why I couldn't, what was going on. But yeah, we've had all sorts already, haven't we, over the last sort of over the festive period. It's not that reminder that the winter is never straightforward in non-league football.
Nothing's ever straightforward in non-league football. Imagine being on the board of a club that have had a fantastic season. They're drawn at home in the FA Cup third round, and then they delay announcing ticket prices for that big game next week. Tamworth against Spurs next weekend, FA Cup third round. Adults, top ticket, I think £42 instead of the usual £21 to be in the stand at Tamworth. Under-10s, terracing ticket is going to be £25. Usually it's free for many of those at that age to go through. It's been a debate, a topical debate on social media since it's been announced. I probably lean towards the Tamworth boards on those ticket prices. I think sometimes we're spoiled in non-league for not realising how expensive it is out there in the real world. And as much as I appreciate being a loyal fan of Tamworth, you know, not really wanting to be exploited, as some of them feel they are, it is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for Tamworth to try and make sure that they cover all the costs.
Yeah, I think you say it's sort of kind of social media debate. Not been an awful lot of debate, has there? And that's maybe been part of the problem. People can't sort of debate these things out now. It's kind of like a, you know, huge sort of pile on, basically. Yeah. And it would be interesting to sort of kind of have a sort of sensible debate about it, really. As you say, you know, you've got experience yourself of putting on big games of football. I don't know what the sort of the costs are around it. I can imagine they are. It's not easy.
It is costs, and it's also contingency costs as well. Because as we say, the weather's about to change, and I have always wanted just to sort of lay these figures out really over the years, and I don't think I'm really speaking too much out of turn. But I remember we played Oxford United first round of the FA Cup. We ended up having to pay an extra £35,000 out to get the specific FA approved, basically inflatable to go over the pitch, which in event of rain would mean that the game could definitely be played and it stopped all the water going on there. It was the only option. If the game was called off, you then didn't get your TV game. You then lost all the revenue, all the additional costs for re-ticketing, allocating, and all that sort of thing. So it would be nice. Yeah, you know, I'll throw it out to the Tamworth committee now. You know, maybe in a few months down the line, they can share all the figures and show that, yes, they'll make a bit of money, and no one really should resent that. But there are big costs that putting these big games on. You know, normally, what, 1,200 people through the doors, through the gates at Tamworth? They'll be looking nearer 5,000. There'll be police costs. I'm sure they haven't normally had to pay for policing. A police lady doesn't come cheap for a footballing day like this, and they will need them for a big, A-grade game, as it will be.
Yeah, it's going to be a huge kind of operation, isn't it? And there's going to be all eyes on the club as well as to what happens. You know, like, it's obviously a lot of money for a ticket and for, you know, a terracing ticket. And that's kind of, we have this romantic view of non-league, don't we, that it's kind of, you know, so great value for money and so cheap and all that kind of thing, in which it is. But, you know, we're seeing all three levels that the costs are going up and up and up. And it is a massive game of football, and that's kind of the possibly one of the problems in football is that, you know, we see some of the, you know, I know how much I paid for some tickets to go and watch England in the Euros, and it was absolutely, it's like, you know, it makes me feel sick thinking about it. But there I was, because I sort of had to be in that stadium watching the game. And as you say, it's once in a lifetime. I think the club have already. I've already announced they've sold out the main stand already of seats. It's very hard to sort of get a full gauge when you're seeing that, say, a social media debate, because there's lots of people kind of having their say. Who, you know, are they kind of going down there to watch the game? I don't know. You know, it's obviously you get with these games, you get day trippers and all that kind of thing as well. And, you know, what the day-to-day Tamworth fans think, you know, it's possibly difficult to know or assume. Some might be quite happy to sort of pay that, because, you know, they know it's going to help their club, and, you know, they're not going to get this opportunity. I see a little bit, oh, in this about replays and things. Well, you know, it's pretty unlikely they'll get a replay anyway, let's be totally honest. You know, possibly they would, but it might give them a chance on the day to get through if they can get it to penalties, because you never know what can happen there. But and it might give them a chance on the day to sort of squeeze through regardless of that anyway. But yeah, it's a very difficult one, and it would be nice to sort of be able to have these kind of sensible sort of debates where you kind of hear all sorts of sides, and then we can sort of make up our mind fully, because, so you don't understand all the sort of the cost of things. And I'm sure they're not sort of like kind of stuff in their pockets to run off into the night, are they? Because, you know, it's sort of people been at the club a long old time at Tamworth, and certainly caused a storm and increased their social media engagement, that's for sure.
Indeed. And there is all these, and it probably would be an hours long show just to slot everything in, because obviously I appreciate, you know, having to pay 25 quid for an under 10-year-old child, and we want them to experience these magical memories so that they'll be involved in non-league forevermore and all that sort of thing. But also you have to consider that that's a £25 ticket that could have been sold to an adult for £42. So there's already a loss at the club, and they'll have to share that with Spurs, obviously, because it'll be a 50-50 split on those tickets. There's a whole gamut of things to consider, and of course any parent that's taken their kid to the cinema or bowling this holiday will probably understand that nothing comes cheap, and an FA Cup third round tie against Spurs is probably a much wiser investment than a game of being whopped by your son or daughter at 10 pin bowling. But I just think, you know, I'll go back to the point. Sometimes with sport in non-league, you know, people are used to paying £1 or £2 for a tea or coffee at their catering outlet, but probably think nothing of paying £5 for a Starbucks or Costa just down the road.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's 100%. That's when people sort of have a little whinge up about the cost of the paper, and I think, well, how much time and hours go into that, and all the sort of resource in there. It costs £2.50. I know it's gone up from a little bit over the last few years, but the people often sort of saying that to you when, as you say, they've got a £2.50 cup of tea in their hand that is just a tea bag, some hot water, and a dribble of milk. So it's, yeah, I think we see this around sort of finals at the end of the season, particularly around the National League final and sort of the early bird ticket, that side of the cost of that final debate is always raised on. But, you know, these stadiums to play in don't come cheap. So, you know, you have the other alternative of going and playing in a smaller stadium for the National League final, for example. And, you know, when you get to sort of finals and big games, should the price kind of go up relative to that? I don't, you know, it is an interesting debate. I guess, you know, the sort of the other side of it is that, as I said, it sort of goes against a little bit what we sort of think non-league is about, but and that's why we love it, because of the feeling of value for money. But There is not yet, that National League level is going up. I mean, again, that's be an interesting a summer piece, yes, to sort of look at the sort of increase in cost. But you know, I've gone to games this year. You know, I'm paying £8 or £5 to park in the car park and things like that. Mm. And you know, everyone's trying to maximise money all over the place. And National League ticket pricing does seem to be sort of going up to like £18 these days. And you know, when I was sort of very, I know the game is completely different. The non-league landscape is completely different now. But you know, you'd be going and watching conference football back then for sort of £7 or £8. Mm. It's a difficult one, and I'm sure you know. Eventually, a game of football between Tamworth and Spurs will be played, and people probably won't be thinking about the prices, especially if Dan Creaney nods them in front in the first sort of 20 minutes or something.
Yeah, I mean, you would probably pay any money for that sort of celebration, wouldn't you? Even if it wasn't the winning goal, and so I suppose drawing it all together, because we talk about, you know, non-league clubs have to be as a business, because what we don't want is for more clubs going out of business. And we heard from Dave Anderson last week about how much the game has changed in, you know, since he's been out of the dugout even. And I thought it worth mentioning about that digital revolution as well, because we're talking about social media. I think the social media pile-on, as you say, has probably not helped the debate, because people don't know how to debate. I think that's it. You know, people have opinions and they don't want to listen to anything else. But social media is something, I mean, we've both been doing it for decades, but I'll admit, although I work with other clients sort of away from this show in on their profiles, it's never been a big focus for the show. It probably should be. But I wanted to highlight how social media has changed football and how it has changed some clubs for the good, certainly. There were some interesting facts from Farnham Town this week. Last year's big success, getting promotion from Step 5 at the top of the Isthmian South Central at Step 4, looking maybe on for back-to-back promotions potentially. Still some disbelief their model though. So over Christmas they did release some stats. They've had 85,000 TikTok views per day in the last year. 2.7 million YouTube shorts, those little tiny videos views on there in that year. And those eyeballs, TikTok eyeballs, were worth £1,700 in revenue over a 2-week payment period. So that's better than most clubs will probably secure across all revenue streams. And this is just one of them, just one social media platform, TikTok. It just shows that social media can be, or it is, so important to football clubs, but in particular, non-league clubs, in creating that snowball effect.
I think, Tim, what I'm taking away from this is, as soon as I finish this call to you, I'm going to go set up a TikTok account. I think. Sounds
good. Well, old friend of the show one of my oldest friends, Russell Grant, has also taken to TikTok in recent months, and it's doing very well from it.
Oh God! Sort of reevaluating everything suddenly. But I think, you know, you can see the success that it also is bringing. And then physically, people going through the gate at Farnham as well. You know, the crowds are huge. You know, I grew up not that far from Farnham Town, from Farnham, and we, you know, as mates, we'd go and watch Farnham Town, and but not many people going and watching Farnham, and it wasn't kind of in the kind of conversation usually, really, to be honest. And you know, you look at, but now people, I sort of know people I've sort of went to school with it. I popped down there because people see it and their kids see it and they want to be and going involved, and that's kind of can't be underestimated as well. And it's, you know, obviously winning football helps, and that's what you're getting down there at the moment. And yeah, I think again, it sort of kind of just shows how different kind of non-league football is these days. As you say, it's not just this Tuesday, Saturday kind of people turn up, what money comes through the gate and sponsorship, local businessmen putting money in and that kind of thing anymore. It's like lots of other factors and lots of other income streams that people are generating for their clubs. And it's it just goes to show. But I guess one of the things that's always been the same, is people talk about money, budgets and who's got what, and there'll be jealousy and all that kind of thing. Obviously they're getting that a lot at the moment, aren't they, Farnham? So it's interesting that they put that out.
Yeah, lots of lots of people talk about the size of your crowd, and as you say, Farnham's crowd was dramatically different from when we were both younger journos covering the game, and usual critics out there. Harry Hugo, though, the club owner, battled back again this week, highlighting that in their last two home games over the Christmas period, they'd brought in £24,000 on just the bar, catering and merchandise alone. So again, they wouldn't have got that. I think they got 2,000 people through the gate in those two games, but they wouldn't have got those people through the gate without everything else that they've been doing on social media. But that social media then brought in some more traditional revenue streams as well. And again, that's a big chunk of money for any non-league club, whatever level they're playing at.
Yeah, 100%. That kind of shows the particularly importance of football around this time of year as well, where people are desperate to kind of get out and watch a game, and they're sort of in that sort of celebratory mood as well to go out and spend a bit more when they're in and meet people. And that's why clubs have been so disappointed yesterday to lose some of those games that we did see go off, because there would have been real money spinners for everyone. And that's, again, we kind of linking back to the Tamworth a bit earlier. You know, I'm not involved in running clubs, and a lot of people are not involved in running clubs, don't sort of fully understand kind of the ins, the outs, and what needs to, all the obligations that need to be met. And if you're getting in that kind of money, then that can take you a long way as well.
Yeah, and we want people to go through the gates. You know, the turnstiles are still important. We need people to get in and down to their club and have a look at that. But clubs also have to think about their wider appeal as well, not just a Saturday match day. You're getting people through the gates and that. So another big thing being part of the social media thing has been YouTube, and it was interesting to see Farnham 30th in the UK football club YouTube channel views for 2024. I think they had 3.2 million views in the last year on their YouTube channel. Non-league doing well as well, with hashtag United, I think, 21st in that same table with 10.2 million views. And hat tip to AFC Welling at step six in the Spartan League. 18 months since they founded themselves, along with a very ambitious aim of a 12-year promotion to the Premier League. Not sure they're going to achieve that. They're certainly achieving some big YouTube views. I think they were 40th in this table. They also had their step seven double in their first season. So they're on their way to success. It's certainly something in this digital stuff.
Yeah, 100%. And saying hashtag had kind of been that real sort of success story from growing the YouTube, sort of how they've grown themselves and what they've been able to get into the National League system and achieve, and other clubs are doing. We've seen with Dorking as well. They sort of get huge for their behind the scenes, and that's, the world is so much smaller now because of digital as well. And these clubs are being watched all over the world. And the interest is there. I'm sort of thinking of Cambridge City, who aren't doing that kind of thing, but they were telling me the other week they were getting orders for shirts from America and Saudi Arabia and all that kind of thing. So there's people out there who are interested in football in this country, and the YouTube, kind of all the things that clubs are doing, which is kind of, again, makes me realise how far non-league has come. When I started at the paper in 2009, it was a lot of club, in the summer, kind of trying to find 50 words to write about each club in the National League North. There's some had lots on their websites, and others kind of almost shut down because it was, volunteers trying to do it and around everything else, and trying to have a break. But we've got all these, brilliant, talented people who come in and know how to do so many amazing things. We've got technology, how far it can, what it can do, and how far it's come in such a short space of time. And it's kind of amazing, really, that it's how it has propelled the game on, and how it has brought more eyes than ever onto it. It's and so I guess it's only gonna get bigger as well.
If I refer back to my when the non-league paper started, and all the results used to be phoned around and phoned into the league, if you didn't have access to all of that as another league club, so you'd ring around the bars of the other football clubs to try and get the results at other clubs in your division. The world's changed considerably. It's changed considerably, but there's still the same problems. I don't know if you saw, not a great Christmas for
Basford United, they had departure of Martin Carruthers over Christmas. Luke Potter, supported by Saul Dini, the new Basford management team, that they've three defeats over the Christmas period in that time. They scored two goals, conceded 12 goals on aggregate. That put them 20th in the out of 22 in the NPL. Chris Munro, owner, put a statement out on Facebook, effectively blaming the players and suggesting he might be forced to pull funding from the club. But same old problems, same old criticisms.
Well, that's it. As you say, for every club we talk about, they are flying and going, well, there's going to be the clubs down there struggling and not picking up the results. And then that's kind of the other sort of reality to it, isn't it? There's the, you know, when things are going great, non-league, it's going to be all good, but there's always going to be the strugglers, and that's when it becomes really, really hard. And the people that sort of turn up when the goals are flying in sort of don't come as regularly, and that sort of money down and all that kind of thing. So, you know, we probably forget the pressures that everyone's kind of playing under and sort of what fine line it can be. And this is a bit of a rally call to the players to try and to get some results. And it'll be interesting if it has a desired effect.
It will be, because there's a... They do have the big fourth round FA Trophy tie this weekend at home to Eastleigh, which I guess will probably be a money spinning opportunity, but also a big shop window for those players who maybe have pulled their laces up and put in a performance. And actually, the club, I'm looking at the table, they're just 6 points behind 11th place Whitby in the table. So it's not a disastrous season so far, but you know, sometimes you need a shock tactic, don't you?
Yeah, sometimes it can change, you know, sometimes have a little break from the league, like I say this weekend, you know, could they, you know, even if they don't get a result, can they put in the performance, it kind of gives them that little bit better belief going forward. And then, as you say, not all that far off, a couple of wins in a few days can sort of change everything, change the picture. And as you say, there's lots has changed in non-league football and football generally in the world, but still, 3 points on Saturdays make all the difference and make everything feel much, much better, and is what ultimately gets it done at the end of the, you know, at the end of the season when you look at the table. So it's we're still very early in the season as well, aren't we? And it's sort of start talking about relegation battles and title races and things. There's an awful lot of play, an awful lot of football to come still, which is really exciting.
Yeah, I think an example over Christmas of how, you know, your luck or a situation can change or turn around. Hellenic Premier, I don't know if you saw this Boxing Day result, Slimbridge 10, Lydney Town 1. I'm sure some sleepless nights, some time for regret, some time for reflection. It certainly worked, though, because a reverse fixture ended Lydney Town 4, Slimbridge 0. As somebody once said, it's a funny old game.
It's a funny old... A week's a long time in football. A week's a long time in football, as they say. So... Yeah, just goes to show that's why why we all turn up and watch, and because you know, if we just don't know what's going to happen, then that's the beauty of football. If it was going to be 10-1 again, it would have been boring, and you know, there wouldn't be nobody in the ground, but people turn up to see what's going to happen. And, yeah, a bit of swift revenge there from the sounds of things.
Yeah, and you know, ever anybody comes to you and says, yeah, don't understand football. Yeah, you know, football's a particularly non-league game. I mean, it's about more than just, you know, 11 guys kicking a football from one end to the other against another 11 guys on the other end. Every week we talk about these managerial moves. There's so many people involved in non-league. Been a bit quiet on the managerial front since we last recorded. What, Shane Goldrick resigned at Withenshaw. Back-to-back titles in past seasons, but then seven straight defeats plunged them into the relegation zone in the NPL West, so he decided it was time to go. Also departing, this time 4 games in and just 6 weeks after leaving fellow Skeffel side Lordswood, Nicky Southall sacked this time at Lidtown. A throuple of managers in the caretaker role there now. Well, we've got Dexter Gondwengi, Ryan Smith, James Rogers, also some departures at Wessex League, Portland United, the joint managers Sean Besant and Josh Hickman. But we have some new arrivals as well. We're new men in the Combined Counties Premier North, Risborough Rangers, Christou and Grantham Town. Just we missed this on last week's show. The NPL Midlands, Nathan Arnold taking up the cudgels there, and I'm sure a number of managers just sat biding their time, looking at the New Year's Day results and maybe the first couple of results in the new year, as to you know, maybe they'll get their boots on, tracksuits. Do managers even wear tracksuits now? I don't know. They tend to wear gilets and
fashionable gilets ready.
Yeah,
they,
yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, yeah, that is one thing that's changing. You don't see many managers like you used to, sort of in their trackies and their sort of Adidas World Cup sort of socks rolled up over the trousers, kind of in the. Yeah, you know, like back in the day, but I guess the pitches are better these days, aren't they? You can sort of wear those expensive trainers out in those technical areas now, so it's not so bad.
Yeah, get to that debate that I had with a player the other day. It didn't seem to be carrying much kit with him, but apparently, yeah, everything was all organised for him, so he didn't need to worry about it. But you know, the number of base layers and the different colour base layers, so that they don't get a yellow card from the referee, and the different bladed boots for different surfaces. It's becoming almost as difficult as buying a coffee in Starbucks.
This is it. You've got to have everything. You've got to have everything sorted, and you've got to have the right socks underneath the socks, the right tape. You know, at least it seems to be that the Yesh players seem to be getting smaller these days, so they've got more room in their kit bags for everything else. But, you know, it's like being a non-league journalist, Tim. It all goes like you have to get more thermals this time of year and get those on, and so I'm putting more layers on myself. So,
you're putting more. I haven't seen your kit bag expand though. It's still you still carry a, you know, maybe a spare pen and a notepad and a laptop, but not too many things have changed with the resources you've got to your fingertips.
No, I've got an assistant now who carries my dictaphone to the game, so one up in the world. I didn't get heated gilet for Christmas, though. I was hoping I'd get one. I sort of keep seeing them. I thought I might get one for Christmas.
I have to say, I did get one for my birthday, and it has been well used. I find that you can lay up very well, particularly when you're watching football. Definitely another one where I missed out on the opportunity to buy shares.
Yeah, well, that's that way. I'm sort of a salesman in hand warmers and feet warmers at the moment as well, so. So I'll try and spread that gospel. Game changer.
While we're spreading the gospel, before we wrap up, new year, new you. Time to help out at your local club. We've mentioned how hard it is to run a football club, and it's also that family and non-league that I can't speak more highly of, because you know there's great people you meet in non-league, and they'll be your friends forever, and they'll look after you through thick and thin. Nice advertorial piece in the non-league paper over the weekend, featuring the Pitching In Volunteers website, which is pitchinginvolunteers.co.uk. It's just a great resource, isn't it, for clubs at step three and step four to advertise the positions available where they need help. But even if you haven't seen an advert, go and approach your club, because they probably do need help. They just haven't had time to ask for the help that they need.
Yeah, 100%. I think you say if you're sort of feeling like in the new year you want to kind of get involved with something and then really have that, you know, be part of something and make a difference, and you know, getting involved in your local club is you know, one of the perfect things to do. And as you say, there's a great resource there to kind of find out what people are looking for. I think sometimes people will probably be surprised. Their sort of skills that they have, they might not think are any use, but actually probably, you know, very come in real handy. And sometimes just as simple things as just going out and sticking some posters out in the local town just to advertise games and things, and just having somebody to do that and just take that little thing off somebody else's very busy list. So, you know, it's that's why we love non-league football, because, you know, when you're just paying to get in, you feel part of it and feel like your money's making a difference, but you can, you know, also get even more involved and you know, I think sort of give a bit back, and I think people get a lot from that as well, and then and how it makes them feel, which is shouldn't underestimate it.
Yeah, it is vital to non-league, to non-league clubs, and well, to just the future of football, really. We haven't even had time to speak about the FA Trophy, maybe FA Cup previews. I'm sure they'll both be covered heavily in this weekend's paper. Anything else we can expect to read in the non-league paper come Sunday morning then, Matt?
Yeah, we're looking forward to the FA Trophy this week. It's kind of sort of fully right. Feels like normally this would be FA Cup weekend, but that's obviously next weekend. So it's kind of sort of threw me a little bit in the planning stage at the start of the week. But yeah, we've got all 16 FA Trophy games this week, as you said. They're out of base. We're playing Eastleigh. Gainsborough up against York, which is a big one. You know, Chertsey going to Aldershot, which is a nice story. Chertsey manager Mark Harper, you know, played for Aldershot and part of successful sides there, so he's taking his team back there. And there's, you know, lots of other interesting ties as well. Sittingbourne obviously flying in the league, but in the trophy as well this year, step four, and they're at home to Salisbury. We're looking ahead at the Vars, which is next week. We'll be back next week. And a little look back on the New Year's Day game, sort of wrap some of that action up, and some brilliant crowds that there were yesterday on the games that went on. Also caught up with Newmarket town manager Michael Shin there. They've just had Ryan Cole, one of their sort of starlets, who sort of came through the academy system into the first team, just bagged a move to Wycombe Wanderers, which is great for him, great for the club, and all involved there. And a nice little tale about how he used to break into the ground to practice his free kicks, and it's definitely paid off at the moment to get him moving into League One.
Oh, I look forward to the paper over the weekend. Matt Badcock, thanks for joining us once again for a new year. Have a great rest of the week, and we'll speak to you again soon.
All right, thanks, Tim, and I'll see you on TikTok.
And that then is it for this week. Apart from a quick edition, news from the appointment at Portland United of the Wessex League, the departure mentioned earlier. There's going to be more joint managers in the form of Craig Adams and Kyle Critchell going in at Portland. Wish them well. Don't forget, you can get involved with the show on social media at Non-League Show, myself there at Tim Fuel, FUELL. And as ever, you can find us every week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, also Google Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, CastBox, iHeart, Geo7, Listen Notes, Overcast, Player FM, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, via your smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites. Stay safe, enjoy your football, thanks for listening, and goodbye.
Casino. Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.